from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello and Register political commentator Paul Kengor remember Justice Antonin Scalia and talk about what the Supreme Court might be like without him. Also, Jeanette gets Stephen Gray Donis' take on Lent and the movies, how your entertainment choices could enhance your understanding of mercy. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Dr. Paul Kengor, is professor of political science and executive director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. He is author of over a dozen books, and his latest book is Takedown, From Communists to Progressives, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage.
Well, Paul, it is great to have you on Register Radio. You know, you write commentaries for the Register quite frequently, and we're always grateful to hear what you have to say. Of course, this time it was a very sad topic. You were remembering the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who died a week ago. And, you know, you call the news of his death a punch to the gut. And so many people, especially Catholics in the pro-life and traditional Catholics, are responding in the same way, that this is, it's like a punch to the gut. What made this man, Justice Scalia, so great that his death is felt so deeply?
Yeah, well, thanks, Jeanette. And let me say, too, and for the people listening, you didn't put me up to this, but I've been a faithful subscriber to National Catholic Register for years. And so it is absolutely the best Catholic publication. There's no question about that.
Well, thank you.
But and I really mean that. But yeah, it was a punch to the gut. And really, the way that I learned about it, I was coming out of the gym on Saturday. It was around 5 or 5:30. And I got a text message from my student assistant, who's actually applying to a bunch of law schools right now. And she doesn't usually send me text messages. I don't usually do much text messaging. But it said simply, Justice Scalia was just found dead. And oh. And I was floored by that.
Right.
I mean, this was not at all what we expected would happen. You know, we knew that when President Obama won the election in November 2008, that if he got one or two terms, in fact, if he got two terms, Jeanette, we figured, okay, he'll probably get three or four picks.
Right.
And after two terms, for him to only get two, and with who he filled with Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, and with Ruth Bader Ginsburg amazingly deciding to stay on, to hang on,
right.
We thought, okay, wow, he's only going to get two. Well, that, you know, that's really dodging a bullet for, you know, groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor, for Catholics who are fighting the HHS mandate,
that's right.
For, you know, pro-marriage forces. And so to find out that Scalia, of all people, a completely unexpected death. He wasn't even 80 years old. I mean, he was 79. He wasn't young, but no one thought he was sick or no one was expecting this. So to see this happen now with the Little Sisters of the Poor case coming up, with religious liberty under assault, and also, too, in a way, even worse, in an already polarizing election year, I mean, this is going to further
right.
polarize the public.
Right.
For me, I don't say this often, but it was one of those sort of why God moments, right? Like, you know,
right.
why God? Why did this have to happen now? And, you know, you realize that, well, people die. This is a fallen world. You know, God's not responsible for this. And God's not responsible for all the things that Scalia seemed to be single-handedly fighting against.
That's true.
But it was just, like you said, it was a punch to the gut.
Absolutely.
And this really puts the major Catholic issues, social cultural issues like marriage and the family, religious liberty, unborn human life, this makes all of those much more difficult now.
That's true. Well, let's talk for a minute about the man himself. I mean, Justice Scalia was a great man. And what constituted that greatness? What will people be talking about for years to come?
Well, I'd say his clarity of vision, his clarity of thought, the fact that he was a faithful Catholic who really perfectly and ideally and properly instilled his faith into his judicial principles, into his understanding of public life, of America, of the American founding. You know, we hear all the time this terrible phrase about separating church and state, usually by people who want to separate church and state and don't really truly understand what that even means. I mean, for a lot of people who use that, they use that as a club, as a battering ram, to try to completely banish faith from public life. But, you know, no one does that. I mean, the making of laws is all about doing what you think is right. And you do that based on your moral code, your philosophy. And for the vast majority of people who've ever lived, certainly in the Judeo-Christian West, you know, your code, your philosophy is infused by a faith. And typically that's been the Christian faith in the United States, the Catholic faith in the case of Scalia and many of us. So he had a really perfect understanding of how exactly you do that properly. And he expressed it with not just brilliance, but an eloquence and a cheer, a flair, a panache that was winsome, that was likable. I mean, even his most entrenched foes liked him and respected him. And I know, I've heard this from students over the years, they've had some of the most secular, progressive law school professors who would still get a big smile on their face when they would discuss one of Scalia's dissents, because they were entertaining, and sure, they were entertaining not in a way like, look at this crazy guy, but entertaining in a way where they were attractive. They were smart, and that made him the leader on the court for the more orthodox side. And now that side is without a leader, and it's down to basically Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, and a not very reliable at times Chief Justice John Roberts.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Paul Kengor, and we're talking about Justice Scalia. Paul wrote a post recently at the nancyregister.com. We've lost one of America's greatest Catholic thinkers and fighters. So as we talk about Justice Scalia, we are talking about what he has left us, and he has left us in a very difficult moment, Paul. You mentioned some of the things, some of the cases that are before the court, the Little Sisters, and other cases that are very, very crucial. What should we expect this year in terms of what will the court do?
Well, I'm not optimistic, and really the leader of the other side on a lot of this was a fellow Reagan appointee, Catholic justice named Anthony Kennedy, who same age as Scalia, mm-hmm. both 79 years old. And, you know, they were both appointed by Reagan. Reagan thought that these were reliable votes. And, you know, Kennedy really let us down and really told us a lot back in 1992 in the case Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And Casey was the governor of my state of Pennsylvania. And in this, Kennedy wrote the majority decision, which upheld Roe versus Wade. And Kennedy there authored what we now call the mystery clause. We call that sarcastically. But he said, and this is a direct quote, "At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life," unquote. And you know, sadly, that is absolutely and unequivocally not the understanding of liberty of the American founders.
Right.
Certainly not of Justice Kennedy's Roman Catholic Church. You know, liberty is not about the right to come up with your own meanings of meaning, you know, your own definitions. Yeah, that's what Pope Benedict XVI, reinforced by Pope Francis, called the dictatorship of relativism. And it was the kind of thing that you had a sense from reading his dissents, Justice Scalia, that you could almost visualize him pulling his hair out as he was reading these things. And unfortunately, you know, that dictatorship of relativism, that thinking, that's going to be the prevailing zeitgeist on the court now, with Kennedy leading the side of Stephen Breyer, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor. And you know, the leader of the other side, Scalia, is now gone, And so suddenly it's, you're looking at 4-3, 4-2, who knows? And again, there couldn't be a worse year for this to happen with so many crucial cases coming up here in 2016.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, there have been so many remembrances of Scalia this week in the mix of all of the, foreboding over what's going to happen next. But there have been so many great remembrances. I do remember one time hearing the justice speak here in Denver. He is such a presence. I just remember that more than anything he said, just how, how his presence. But have you heard or have there been any kind of remembrances that have just really struck you?
Yeah, that's a good point. He did have presence. That's a really good way to put it. Well, I guess there's two, and one that I mentioned in the National Catholic Register piece. A friend of mine called me within about a minute after I got the text message from my student, and I was at a pizza shop and I was picking up pizzas for a party, and he's a Catholic journalist, and I knew right away why he was calling, but I was at the counter and I didn't even say hello. I just said, I heard the news, I'll call you right back. And I called him back, and he had interviewed Scalia a number of times, at least twice, and he actually knew him and knew his family. And he told me that somebody very close to Scalia had compared Scalia to Frodo in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And he said that Scalia increasingly felt like the keeper of the ring, right?
Sure.
Like he was almost single-handedly holding back, fighting off the forces of relativism, and doing so in a country of a people that once knew the difference between good and evil but now don't. And my friend said that was really wearing him down. And he even speculated. He said, I don't know if we'll find out that his heart gave out or if he had a heart attack. He said, but he, as much of a cheerful warrior as he was, this really wore him down. So that's one thing. And I saw another piece just today that a friend of mine, Jerry Newcomb, has written about a speech that Scalia gave at a prayer breakfast at the First Baptist Church in Mississippi several years ago that I had never seen before, but he described himself there as a fool for Christ. I thought that was really touching, and my friend Jerry, who's a very devout evangelical, he said, well, those familiar with this know that Scalia was referring to the Apostle Paul in his first letter to the Christians in Corinth in the New Testament. And I emailed Jerry. I said, that's probably right, but so Jerry, you wouldn't know this as a non-Catholic, but St. Francis described himself as a fool for Christ as well. And, Francis is the patron saint of Italy. And Scalia was ethnic Italian.
Of course.
And so I wonder if he felt a kinship with Francis as well. And remember, Francis was the one tasked by Christ on the cross in San Damiano to rebuild his church and to do it with that sort of same cheerful panache and flair. And in the end, Francis too eventually just simply wore down.
Right. Well, we were very grateful for your recollections about the great Justice Scalia. We pray for the repose of his soul, and we pray for those he left behind, his 9 children, his wife, his 26 grandchildren, as he is laid to rest today. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you.
When we return, we'll talk about Lent and the movies with Stephen Gray Donis. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Stephen Gray Donis, is the film critic for the National Catholic Register and Decent Films, the online home for his film writing. Stephen has a BFA in Media Arts from the School of Visual Arts in New York and a Master's in Religious Studies from St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Overbrook, Pennsylvania. Stephen's currently pursuing diaconal studies in the Archdiocese of Newark, New Jersey. Today, he and Jeanette will talk about some movie choices that can help you in your journey through Lent.
Well, Stephen, we are over a week into Lent, and most of us have probably gotten into a good Lenten routine already, but maybe some of us haven't. Let's start with, how is your Lent going?
You know, it's going pretty well, I think. I don't like to talk too much about what I'm doing for Lent, but I can say that the first full week is probably the most difficult week for me. It's the week when I'm most inclined to cheat on some of the resolutions that I've made. The first 3 days, Ash Wednesday into the first Friday, to me, that's kind of sets the tone for how the rest of my Lent is going to go, so I'm very strict. But then as that first long week wears by, it's a little bit more difficult to stick to it. And then by the second week, I think I'm pretty into it.
You're into a groove. And that groove, let's talk about why we try to get into a groove during Lent to begin with. I mean, it's something we're encouraged to enter into with prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, but often these things can just be ideas. They're really meant to draw us closer to Christ. What is your take on what Lent is all about?
Lent is extremely important for us because we are fallible and fallen creatures, and because we struggle with the effects of original sin, with concupiscence. We have disordered appetites, weakened wills, and darkened intellects. And so we don't start out at a kind of a nice baseline. We are all, in a sense, Christian anthropology teaches us, damaged goods out of the box. And so what we need is a kind of spiritual boot camp. We need to get our appetites under the control of our will, and our will under the control of Christ. And so the disciplines of Lent are meant to do this. They're meant to draw us out of ourselves, to draw us away from the egocentrism of giving into our appetites all the time, to direct our attention to God through prayer and to others through almsgiving.
And how rigorous is it meant to be? I mean, is it our ancestors, our grandparents abstained from meat all week long, and it was quite a challenge, some of the physical things that had to be done during Lent. Is our Lent supposed to be rigorous?
A lot of the norms around Christian spirituality traditionally were based on the monastic experience. So they were really intended for those who were dedicated to religious life. And the spirituality of the laity did not come to be really considered until the time of, say, Francis de Sales and Thomas More. But adjustments were always made to the experiences of lay people. So there was a very high standard, but not everybody was meant to keep it to exactly the same degree, and adjustments have always been made. That's still the way it is in the Eastern Orthodox Church, and I have huge respect for my Eastern Christian friends, my Eastern Catholic friends, and my Eastern Orthodox friends, who make a serious effort to give up all meat and all animal products, eggs, dairy, as well as oil and wine throughout the whole of Lent. I think they're allowed to have like oil and wine on weekends or something. It's a daily sacrifice for them. Yes. For us, as Western Catholics, I fear that we have made the discipline of Lent far too easy. How difficult is Lent meant to be? It should be difficult enough to be uncomfortable. It should be difficult enough that you have to think about it on a daily basis and make a sacrifice of your experience to God. I think that what we've done now with the one-hour Eucharistic fast and with abstinence on Fridays only and only during Lent, and in particular also with what we call our two fast days, Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, you're still allowed to eat three times a day on the 2 days that we're expected to fast. I think our ascesis is too atrophied to really cost us anything, and I think that that's a problem.
Sure, that makes sense, Stephen. I mean, it's like if you were getting ready for a big sport event. I mean, you certainly would take much more rigorous attempt to prepare for that sporting event than many of us prepare for the most important time of year, which is the remembrance of Christ's passion and his resurrection. So I think you're right. We can all step it up a bit. And you actually encourage Register readers to step it up in an article you did called Mercy and Movies, Lenten Viewing for the Year of Mercy. And we're talking about this article here during Register Radio. So let's talk about what you're suggesting, because Pope Francis has actually asked us this Lent to dwell a little bit on mercy, the works of mercy, and you've been able to pull out some ways we can do that in our entertainment.
This is the year of mercy, and so this Lent is a special Lent. The fact that it occurs so early in the year, I think, is a special grace, because it gives us an additional time of preparation to spend the remaining months of the year of mercy in a new spirit. Many people for Lent turn away from the media or social media. They turn off their radios, right. They turn off their televisions, they walk away from Facebook and the internet, they stop watching television and movies. I think all that is fantastic. It's not something I can do with my
me
job.
Neither.
I have to keep watching movies. But just as many people turn to spiritual reading during Lent, I try to turn to spiritual movie watching. And I did a piece a number of years ago for the Register called Into the Desert, in which I explored movies with spiritual themes that I find helpful in Lenten discipline. But for this year, because it's the Year of Mercy, I tried to call out a number of films that really draw us out of ourselves and focus on our involvement and our commitment to the lives of others. So, for example, in my list that I did 5 or 6 years ago, I started out with Integrate Silence, which is a great documentary about the Carthusian monks of the Grand Chartreuse in the French Alps. It's a beautiful, beautiful film about monastic life, and watching it is almost like a retreat in itself. On the other hand, these monks are very much in a world unto themselves. They're among the most eremitic or hermit-like orders in the Christian world, so they're much more on the isolated end of the spectrum. For this year, I recommended Of Gods and Men, which is also about monks and has some similarities to Integrate Silence. But the Trappists of Our Lady of Atlas in the Algerian Atlas Mountains during the Civil War in the 1990s, the film is based on a true story, are very much involved in the lives of the people around them. They live in a world in which there are Muslim extremists and then much more moderate and peaceful Muslims who have actually gravitated to the monastery, and a village has grown up at the feet of the monastery because the Muslim villagers look on that area as sacred to the Mother of Jesus, and the Mother of Jesus is someone that they revere, so they look up to the monks. They come to them with their medical needs, with bureaucratic needs, and they really regard the monks as their protectors. It's a fantastic, fantastic film of gods and men in any year, but especially in the Year of Mercy.
Yeah, it is definitely a stirring movie. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Stephen Graydonis, and we're talking about movies that might enhance your Lenten experience. So, Stephen, there are about five more on that list that you've given us at the Register. What are the other five movies?
Three of them are actually films from the 1995 Vatican Film List. These include The Tree of Wooden Clogs from 1978. This is a beautiful film, one of my favorites, about it offers a depiction of life at the turn of the 20th century in rural Italy. It also depicts the role of the church in that society, and then also deals with the kind of economic and social injustices and inequalities that Pope Francis wants us to be concerned about this year in particular. Also, Monsieur Vincent, which depicts the life of St. Vincent de Paul, an amazing saint, and really the father of organized charity. Charity has always existed in Christian society and elsewhere, but St. Vincent de Paul really has the responsibility of founding the first institutions to carry on that work. Then the third one is The Gospel According to St. Matthew by Pier Paolo Pasolini. This is a beautiful Life of Christ film that tells the story of Jesus only using the dialogue from the Gospel of Matthew, and then, of course, also the pictures of Pasolini. It's really highlighted by the urgency of Jesus' message and his concern for the poor. The other two films are Romero, starring Raul Julia as Blessed Oscar Romero of El Salvador, very much like Pope Francis, a Latin American prelate who early in his career was considered a theological conservative, later noted as a crusader for social justice. And then finally, Sophie Scholl, The Final Days, great depiction of the last days in the life of the famous anti-Nazi intellectual resistance activist who was put to death by the Nazi regime.
Well, these really are a great set of films for us to dwell on during these weeks of Lent, something that if we cannot give up entertainment or movies for Lent, to really to help us to find a way to enter in, because Pope Francis really has asked us to enter into this year of mercy, and sometimes these visual images really give us a chance to do that. So, Stephen, thanks for giving us this opportunity to understand a little better how we might live the year of mercy.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Remember, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register, and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.